being awake or awakening is our way, our life. And there's nothing extra that we need to do. That's what we're doing when we're sitting. That's what we're doing throughout the day. And yet, we often are not awake in the midst of our life. So, we use all sorts of opportunities and, I could say, devices to enable us not to be awake, but to see how and where we're missing this awakened life that we are. So I want to talk about a few useful phrases that can help us to see what's going on. Do you ever find yourself using something like "I wish" or "if only"? Whether you use that specific word or something like that, thinking, "Oh, if only I had," or "if only she would," or "if only he had," whether for so-called future or so-called past, or "I wish," da da da. Now, there's nothing wrong with those phrases, but when we use and believe the phrase and what comes after that, that becomes often a way for us to miss this awakened moment, or to miss being awake as this moment life, or as this moment life death. That becomes a way to further become entangled in daydreams or emotion thoughts that perpetuate self and not self, that perpetuate avoiding right here. If only he had done that, if only I had said that, then I wouldn't da 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 da. I wouldn't have to feel this, I wouldn't have to be here, I wouldn't. Joko once pointed out that sometimes we say, "Oh, I got lost in thought," or "I got lost in upset." She asked, when we say, "I got lost," what are we losing? What are we losing when we get lost? Yeah, see if you could say it a little differently. In a way, what Joko said is what we're losing is reality. We're losing reality of life, which is being awake. See? When we get lost, or when we believe, if only, whether for past or future, whether believe "I wish that," then at that moment we lose the reality of who and what we are. Now, in one sense, fine, so we lose that reality. I don't like this reality. I wish this reality was different. There, I said it. If only I didn't have to put up with this reality. But what we get from that is we get stress and suffering, dissatisfaction, and we get all that comes from that and entangles us in doing things that are harmful to ourselves and to others, if I say it in such a way. Doing things that keep us from being the richness and joyousness that is our life. So, as you know, I don't like to talk too much on such days like this, but rather I like to say a little and then encourage us to explore it together, because that's what's most useful, exploring this together in a way that it can serve to support us in being awake, in us to be awake now, and us to be awake throughout our life, and it can become maybe something that's skillful for you when circumstances and conditions are appropriate. So I'll stop now and see if we can explore this a little. Or you might have a different phrase rather than "if only" or "I wish" that you notice comes up.
Well, as you say, when I find myself saying, believing "I wish," "if only," it's generally preceded by "I don't like."
Good.
This is not good. So I wish whatever it might be.
Good.
And it's always, generally I'll say, a case where if I look back at situations like that, inevitably it's a misunderstanding of what this person said or what the situation actually was. And it's generally I know you don't like phrases like this, but an insertion of self into a situation and not being in touch with reality, I want to say.
Now, there's nothing wrong with wishing or looking back and saying, "Oh, if I had done or hadn't done A, B, C, then there might be something else there." So in one sense, there's nothing wrong with those phrases as ways of seeing what skillful and appropriate choice is right now and what consequences, what I could learn from. Nothing wrong with those phrases. Nothing wrong with even feeling, "Oh, there's something wrong right now." Okay. So what's skillful and appropriate right now? If I feel, "Oh, he's so upset, there's something wrong with this." Good. So what can be a response to that? By being awake with him, he and I together, what's skillful and appropriate now? But often when we use the phrase, we use it in a way, as you say, to just entangle ourselves further and add judgment. He's bad, he's wrong, I was bad, and then beat ourselves and others up, which isn't skillful and appropriate, because instead of enabling us to be awake, joyous, harmonious, it enables and results in harm and stress, dissatisfaction and suffering. So,
well, to go on a little bit, the practice that I like to try and do in a situation like that, and sometimes it gets helpful, and sometimes not so much, is to look at what I'm holding on to. What do I believe? What am I carrying into this situation that is extraneous, you might say, or even false?
And to see that holding is then the opportunity to release that holding, to release that, as you say,
that's
false.
Yes, that's more difficult.
Well, at least to see it as it is doesn't mean that we no longer are blinded by it, but we could even see a little through it, or it can become even more transparent, or it can simply drop away, or be another cloud in the sky that just passes through. That's what clouds do.
Yeah, it's wonderful when it looks that way.
Well, it's dependent on our effort.
It is.
I wonder if this is a variation on that theme. I find myself avoiding things. So rather than saying I wish or I should or I whatever, I may get a phone call at work, and I know it is not going to be pleasant. I have to return this call. So instead of just doing it, I suddenly find that I need to do this thing first and this thing. I mean, eventually make that call, but I'm avoiding something. Is that the same sort of thing?
I would encourage you to notice the thought, it's not going to be pleasant, and I don't want to have to notice that thought, because already before we even get hit by the stick, we're taking the stick and hitting ourselves. It's not going to be pleasant. I shouldn't have to deal with them. Because then already we've got a sore shoulder before we even begin speaking to them. Because then we can't be awake hearing them as they are, because all we're hearing is, oh, this unpleasant. And through that, unless we see that and see how to skillfully practice with that, then we can't be, if I use the expression, awake with this so-called unpleasant person as they are. Unpleasant phone call that conditions and circumstance require me to make right now. I mentioned to someone, you know, now with caller ID, you sometimes can notice who's calling you, and you can, oh! Now, you're free to decide if you want to speak to them or not, but if you can notice that reaction to them, and for a moment see how to practice with that so that doesn't blind and hinder you before you answer hello, so that you could be present answering hello, even if they're so-called a difficult person or it's a difficult situation, which is what you're talking about. See, we don't get to choose many things in terms of our bodily condition, our mental condition, the condition of the people we're with. Some things we get to choose and some things we don't. But being awake, being alive, means being with the conditions and circumstances as they are. What we then see is what choices that are skillful and appropriate we can make, or at least see what unskillful, harmful choices we can not choose, or see that we've chosen them and then see what to do, because that's what ends up causing all sorts of difficulties. And one of the aspects of sitting practice is we can see how much this mental, emotion, thought, or self-centeredness operates in the midst of nothing happening, and yet we can become entangled in this even as we're sitting still, being, breathing, being present. All the more so in the other circumstances. Now, it's up to you to see what phrases and words are in your repertoire and what the consequences of holding or believing them are, and then what's skillful to work with them.
What was the phrase that Joko used when she talked about hope? I think it was something like, don't hope.
Don't put everything in one basket. In other words, don't stop hoping for something that, you know, is out of your control. In other words, it's good to have that thought of something good happen or something like that, but don't put all your energy into that hope. Be aware of right now.
Well, hope in a way is like I wish. You know. Well, it's fine. You could wish for all sorts of things, and then you could see what's skillful to do with this wish. Or you could not see, but you can get caught up in, I wish he, she was different. I wish I didn't. And then, in a sense, that hinders us from functioning and being alive right now and doing what this moment, cause and effect, requires, or what this moment, cause and effect, gives us the opportunity to live freely as. See? If I keep wishing that my leg didn't ache so much, then I can't see what to do to stretch it, or to get up, or to use what I need to get up. Because the wish hinders me from being here. If I wish she didn't show up, then I can't be with her when she shows up, despite the fact that I don't want her to show up. Instead, I'm all caught up in how angry I am and upset I am that she showed up. Or vice versa. I mean, you know. So the point is to notice when it occurs, when we're holding on to various ideas, emotion, thought that's hindering us. So I bring up I hope, or if only, or I wish as two phrases that I sometimes hear from people. If only, if only, if only, you know. And then I heard it from people, that variations, if only. And then the suffering that it creates afterwards. What's
yesterday? I had this experience. You're talking about yesterday. I'd been home from work about an hour. I changed into my jammies and I was all comfy and ready for a nice, quiet evening at home. And the phone rings, and it's Young Security. We're having an alarm at your office. We have a signal that says your door is open and the police are there, and they need you to come up there right now.
Okay.
I'm thinking, oh crap, you know. I ruined my evening. So now I got to get dressed, I got to get in the car, I got to drive all the way back to the office. And on the way there, I suddenly realized, wait a minute, these people are serving me. These people are trying to help me. And looking out after my best interests, and all I care about is I got to change clothes and get in the car. And what a self-centered jerk! Yeah. And I could have held on to that self-centered attitude and got there and been a real jerk to the cops. Yeah, what are you calling me for? But instead, when I got there, what I realized, wait a minute, these people are trying to help me. You know, and it was a much more pleasant situation than it could have been.
Yeah. You had a wonderful opportunity to see attachment to pajamas and to having it go a certain...
A nice comfy chair. Yeah.
Now, in one sense, it's simple. But in another sense, attachment can create all sorts of suffering in our life if we can't let go when circumstances and conditions show us that we have to let go, that this is the time to let go. Instead, we get a sore arm from holding on to it, and we get upset about it, and we suffer and cause suffering for others, or worse. Now, if you had said, okay, and then called up, let's say, one of your sons who also works with you and who was in the neighborhood and said, could you go over and check it out? That would have been fine. However, if you got upset with them because they didn't do that, I want you to go.
I don't want to have to do it. I'm in my jammies.
Yeah. Now, that's an easy one. Yes.
You know, I realize that I've had this perpetual fear from probably a very young age of that I have to have a job at all times.
Uh-huh.
And part of it's because I've always been single. I have to rely on myself. And so I realize in this position that I'm in right now that I've been working 60 to 80 hours a week out of fear of losing this job because, you know, I have to support myself. Well, I hit a wall, a physical wall, and I had to go on medical leave, and I don't believe there's a lot of repercussions for my health, even though I have to go have some tests done. But you know, it leveled everything.
Mm-hmm.
It just leveled my fear to realize that I hit this wall, I couldn't physically go anymore. And so what was there? There was just me and my fear.
Mm-hmm.
Though I can't say that the fear isn't still there to a certain degree, but I'm trying not to get off into the future because I really, you know, I have no control. I always have this illusion that I have control.
And the fear can remind you, oh, there's something to do right now, or the fear can hinder you from being right now and seeing, oh, is there something right now, today, to fear? Or is even this fear something that there's something to do for about tomorrow? Or is this something that I've imagined? We can go around and around with the fear without ever dealing with what we're fearful of. And we can spend weeks, months, years on fears of things that never happen and have little basis. And the result of that is that we live in fear and therefore we miss our life. And we miss the life of those who are sharing life with us. The words are wonderful tools and have the potential, if we get caught by them, if we hold on to them or try to push them away, they have the potential of creating all sorts of entanglements and the consequences of those. When we don't see, are not clear and present with what's going on. Instead, live out of the reactive habit that can be thoughts and feelings and emotions and beliefs and all sorts of other forms of functioning, bodily, mentally. Yes?
But that list that you just gave also could be something we could use as a technique.
Speak a little louder.
That list that you just mentioned could be a list of techniques that each of us could learn about ourselves and how, what triggers that or when that begins to happen. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense or not. Just as you're grabbing a hold of something, either the thought comes, you know, I'm feeling kind of indifferent about this, or there's something strange about that, as opposed to the habitual just.
That's right. On. So that can become opportunity of practice or a support of practice if we can notice it and skillfully and appropriately use it as opposed to being used by it. So the reactive habit of I wish or if only is just can be just a reactive habit. It's just a phrase, but it can be an a reactive emotion, thought, habit that takes us over, and we go on, we automatically act out of it as opposed to our present and see what if we want to make use of that. You know, if someone comes over to you and says, let's go out to dinner, where do you wish to go? Oh, I wish to go to a such and such restaurant. Fine. Maybe there is. Maybe there isn't. Maybe the other person doesn't want to or can't. But if I have to, I really wish you would go to where I want to go. Well, then you know what happens with when you hold on to that.
Go home.
Yeah, I was overcome by fear, anxiety, paranoia one time.
Uh-huh.
And I started reading Thich Nhat Hanh's books.
Uh-huh.
They have helped me tremendously. They have been really, those books are very good. His writings are mindfulness, you know, uh-huh. and insight, and, you know, extremely good. You know, that has helped me a lot. You know.
But it's always the specific practice of how to, if I use the expression, bow with this present moment.
Right.
To embrace and be intimate as this present moment, and then use all sorts of skillful devices to enable and support us to do that. Yes, so books, phrases, but the book is in the book. Then we have to take what we see and hear and read and make it alive in our own practice. Then we support ourselves and the life of all the universe that we encounter from morning to night. And that's what our task is, if I say. That's the bodhisattva task, to support, enable the whole universe to manifest the compassion and wisdom that we are. Yes. Do you have to speak up a little louder?
I just wonder then, is there some self-talk or phrase that we can substitute as we see those moments and can identify what can we substitute for those phrases?
If you want a phrase, you can... I don't want to choose one for you. I mean, there's many. You could say, notice and breathe, or notice, be present. And then but the phrase isn't enough. The phrase is just a reminder. And after a while, you don't even need the phrase because you do it. Or, you can use breath, which is even closer and more intimate than a phrase. But if you want to use a phrase, find what works for you. Different people find different phrases are useful, and it's better to find what's yours rather than to pick one that's the best phrase. And many traditions have different phrases that they use. But a phrase is just a support and a reminder to be right here, which is beyond any phrase. And it's beyond the phrase, and it's important to know that so that we're not blinded by the phrase. Because otherwise, after a while, the phrase itself becomes something that blinds us. So that's why I say what's important is being awake. And being awake isn't being awake. The word being awake isn't being awake. Being awake is being awake. So, but you could use a phrase, be awake. Okay. Awake. Or whatever. Be present. Or just this. All sorts of phrases that ancestors have used. But after a while we have to see that it's not a matter of copying what someone else said or even copying ourselves, but it's the doing right now. The doing right now. Someone here wanted.
I don't think my situation is unique, but no one else has brought this up. Two very important people in my life I consider difficult people. One is a difficult person because who they are doesn't serve me, but they want to be really close to me. And the other person, I think, serves me well, but doesn't want to be close to me. And in the midst of it all, I see that I'm a difficult person as well in the way that I react to them in so many ways.
Yeah.
I'm constantly escaping reality.
Okay. Now, it's interesting to say I'm constantly, because that's a judgment that you're expanding. So when you notice you're saying, oh, they're coming or they want to be with me, they're so difficult to be with. Okay. Then, if you are with them, despite the fact they're so difficult to be with, can you be present and see if there's some specific thing that's called for in response to what they're doing or not doing? Can you, despite the fact that you say they're difficult to be with, since you are with them, can you be with them? Or, vice versa, with a person who isn't there, can you be present despite the fact that you would want them to be there and they're not there? See, in one sense, it's appreciating what you don't have, and it's appreciating what is here right now. One of my teachers used to always, often use the phrase, appreciate your life. Now, appreciate doesn't necessarily mean like, doesn't necessarily mean get what you want or not get what you don't want. But appreciate means being intimate right this moment with the life as it is. What is that? What is that? In a way, that's our task. Our practice task is how to appreciate and be intimate as this moment, which is being awake, and therefore being able to see how to respond, what's called for.
What does it mean to be intimate?
Oh, good. That's yours to discover. See, in a way, that's what we start with. When we're sitting, we're being intimate. And then we discover we want to figure it out, and yet the practice is not to figure it out, or not to hold on to what we figure out, but to be and discover out of being. It's because we taste something with our tongue and mouth that we can know what it tastes like. It's not a description that's going to tell us how to taste and what the taste's going to be. So, in a way, sitting, breathing, practicing is discovering what being intimate is and what the intimacy of the present moment is, which is what being awake is. So, I won't say more. Okay. I think I've spoken enough. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for sitting, and thank you for being present.
Thank
Let's
you
end.
Yeah.
Welcome.
copyright 2013, Eliu Genmyo Smith.